been gone, and while we've been gone, Mercury has been in retrograde, and big things have been popping. What's been going on, Cass?
So I moved to LA, and then, like, upon arrival, all my shit broke. Like, my laptop broke, my computer broke, the sound from the first time we recorded this podcast broke. And so, like, I love LA, and the transition has been very wonderful, but Scam City has taken forever to reboot because Mercury in retrograde came for my neck. And I moved to LA and I'm like, is the universe a New Yorker? Is she mad that I'm in LA right now?
I'm mad because honestly, we already recorded this episode, but we recorded it the day that Cass moved and we truly sounded unwell.
I was like sobbing all day and then tried to talk about this scam and would sob in between talking about this scam. So it sounds like this scam is making me cry, and it's not. It's actually making me laugh because it's so ridiculous. So let's just jump right into it. Hit me with that question of the scam.
Give you that question of the scam. All right. So this question is a little, it sounds really niche. Okay. It does sound a little strange, but just let me run through the hypothetical scenario and then it'll start to make sense. All right. So we literally all have that friend who like knows someone, right? Like your homegirl who's like, oh, I can get us tickets to this. Or like, oh, like I know somebody who works at that company. So imagine that that friend comes to you and says, hey girl, let me have one of your French fries real quick. I have an idea. I want to powwow with you. And you're like, okay, cool. And so she says, so how would you like to win $1 million? Like in a contest, it's like semi-legal, like you're gonna pay taxes on that money, but like how do you feel about winning? You have to decide three things. First question, do you do it, yes or no? Second question, do you take the money up front in a lump sum or in small payments of like $50,000 a year spread out over the course of 20 years? Okay. Third and final question, your friend says to you that you now have to pay her like a finder's fee so that she and all the someones that she knows can like get their, you know, get their cut of the check. And she's demanding $50,000, but she says, hey, you can either give me $50,000 right now today, or you can get it to us within that first year of you getting, you know, the money. How do you maneuver the situation?
Wow, this sounds like something my mother would hate for me to say yes to, but I absolutely would say yes to this. And like this girl sounds like one of the friends that I would have that my mom is like, they are not your friends, and I still hang out with them. That's this girl. So anyway, yes, of course I take it because I want to make money and all I have to do is just give this girl a kickback. Sure, I'm taking it. And so listen, I spend money like I'm Rihanna, like I'm constantly spending money because I constantly need new things. So I need to take this in small payments of $50,000 a year for 20 years because one, I like to just feel rich every year for like 20 years. And two, I would go ahead and try to buy like a yacht, Drake, like a museum. Like see how I don't have enough money for all of this shit? I would still try to buy this shit. So yeah, I have to take the small payments. And finally, do I pay the $50,000 finder's fee up front or in the back end? Definitely pay her up front. I just feel like I don't want this girl in my life. Like, I want to do this scam with you and never see you again because then you're in my Venmo mentions.
And then they hit that reminder, remind.
In actuality, I just want to be humble for a year. So I just give her the first year and then collect my money for 19 glorious years.
We are doing this completely in the opposite direction. So I'm going to do it, right? Against my better judgment, but, you know, I like to shop to fill emotional voids. So I'm going to take her up on it, but I'm taking the lump sum. I feel like the planet Earth is a literal dumpster fire, right? I feel like it may not be around in 20 years. So I'm going to take that $1 million up front. Because it's just, I don't want to die before I'm done getting my money. Like, I want my money and I want it now, right? And then I'm also thinking about it and I'm like, okay. Maybe I take that $1 million and I figure out a way to flip it into more money so that I can secure a seat on the shuttle when people start moving to Mars.
It'll literally be like you, Beyonce, Jay-Z, Blue Ivy, and the twins on like a jet to Mars.
And I literally be like, all right, Beyonce, you're great. Jay-Z, don't talk to me. Blue Ivy, what are we doing this afternoon? Where are we brunching? You know what I mean? We're going to establish a new world order on Mars. And it's all because I took that money up front. And then to answer the third question, I'm going to pay her that $50,000 before I even get the million. I'm going to mortgage my house, refinance my house. I don't know anything about business. So I'm just like, here are buzzwords. I'm going to equity. I'm going to IPO. I'm going to mortgage, refinance. I'm going to sell the bottom line. I'm going to do whatever I have to do with the home that I hypothetically in the situation would own. Ask my mama to do it for her house. Yeah, because I feel like it's all fun and games until the mob comes knocking at your door with baseball bats. And I just don't want them up in my Venmo mentions being like, remember that time that we helped you illegally obtain this money? Run us our check. Like, I have anxiety. I don't want that kind of stress in my life. This has been the perfect segue into our, what the Daily Beast has been calling a McScam. And so Cass, why don't you tell the kids at home, what is the McDonald's sweet tea?
So in 1987, McDonald's decides we're going to put on this nationwide game of Monopoly. And ideally, it's for the McDonald's super fans, right? It's for the people who eat so much McDonald's that you could collect little stickers that are placed on McDonald's products. McDonald's kind of did this whole thing where they were like, let's make so much money off these people and gamify it. And gamify it they did. So anyway, McDonald's launches this game, Monopoly, and promises us that we could win millions. All we have to do is purchase our body weight in McDonald's food, peel back as many Monopoly stickers, find the winning pieces, and be billionaires for life. Except no one actually won these pieces. And that's because for the entire duration of the game, one man named Jerome Jacobson controlled all of the winners in a very sloppy system where he gave out winning game pieces like it was Monopoly money. The tea gets hot in 2000 when the FBI gets involved, tracks down Jacobson, and finds that he has this like web of accomplices that now includes psychics, the mob, housewives, and Mormons. Yes, Mormons are involved. This is actually the longest running scam we featured on Scam City. It lasted over a decade. It saw three different presidents, two of them which are Bushes, and Jacobson, who's the center of the scam, he got away with $24 million.
But before we get into the nitty gritty, and we're not talking about what's in a McDonald's burger, y'all, let's talk about the actual players and the game of McDonald's Monopoly itself. Who was involved?
So Simon Marketing. Simon Marketing is a marketing firm, right? And they create the pieces for the Monopoly games. McDonald's hires them. They also used to make Happy Meal toys, and they probably should have just stuck to that because maybe they would still be in business. After this scam, Simon Marketing gets deep fried and later liquidated. Basically, Simon Marketing had two jobs: create and distribute the pieces safely without getting them stolen. They failed. They are also responsible for hiring the scammer that pretty much fucked over the entire nation and McDonald's. So, like, double failed. The second player is the actual Monopoly game, which is a scam in itself. Like, it's rigged for no one to win. This is pretty much like a Russian doll of scams. So then our third player is Jerome Jacobson. Everybody at work called him Uncle Jerry, and we mentioned that he worked for Simon Marketing. He was actually the director of security, and so that's how he had his hands on all of these big winning pieces. He actually oversaw the creation of all the pieces. When he had some alone time with these big winning pieces, he would take them, and then with these winning pieces, he would give them to his accomplices. They would cash out, give him a kickback, and that's how he was able to become like a CEO of his own kickback corporation. The collateral in this scam are these Monopoly pieces. Simon Marketing printed 500 million pieces 24 hours a day for 3 months. If you lined up these pieces, they stretch from New York to Sydney. Australia.
Oh, okay, got it. Other side of the world.
Yeah, these pieces, they have passport stamps. They have global entry. People would sell these pieces on eBay. So you were essentially spending real money on pieces of paper. The real tea is that you only had one in 250 million chances of winning $1 million.
I kind of think it's interesting because, like, anyone who's ever played the game of Monopoly knows that, like, the real power is, like, buying, you know, like, the set, right? Like, who wants Baltic Avenue unless you have the other pieces in that set, so that when somebody passes go and collects that 200, you're like, hands up, cash out, I want my money because you just landed on my piece with a house on it and a hotel. So it's just interesting because, like, the real point of the game and the real way that you win is to buy these, you know, the collections, right? The same sets. So this is how the game actually was designed to be a scam. So everyone knows that in Monopoly, there are four railroad pieces, right? Reading Railroad, Pennsylvania, B&O, and the Short Line. Like, those are the actual, like, you know, pieces that you would want to buy in the game. But in the McDonald's Monopoly version, they would print thousands of pieces for three of those lines. So there'd be like 100,000 Reading Railroads, 100,000 Pennsylvania Avenue pieces, 1,000 B&O Railroad pieces, just like floating around the country. But then they would only print like 100 of the Short Line pieces, which is the piece that you need to win to make a full set and win a PT Cruiser. So those odds were better than you winning $1 million, but like still not really realistic, because I think you had one and 150 million like odds of winning the actual PT Cruiser. Also, I'd like to note, PT Cruiser, my dad drove a PT Cruiser. He bought a PT Cruiser. Don't ask why, that's irrelevant. I just sort of feel like if you're gonna be auctioning off things, please make it things that people can't afford. Like, please, how about we auction off a Rolls Royce, okay? This is the equivalent of auctioning off, like, a Honda Civic. You can win a free Honda, you know, a Toyota Corolla. Cool, I could also, like, buy a Toyota Corolla, like, because that's, like, a very reasonably priced car. Like, the odds just don't seem that great. But you know what? No one asked me, and no one gave me winning pieces, so I'm going to mind my business on that. And the last fact that I have, McDonald's paid Simon Marketing $500 million to like oversee the production and the security of the production process for this game. And that actually brings us back to our most important player, the only player in the story whose like name really matters. And that's our ex-cop, your favorite white uncle, Jerome, also Uncle Jerry.
More on Jerome Jacobson when we get back. So we're in 1995, and this is when the mix scam really begins. Someone at Simon Marketing has the brilliant idea to promote Uncle Jerry from security guard to director of security, which means the person in charge of protecting the pieces was also the person stealing the pieces.
So wait, hold on, really quick, because I have a few questions. Why was his name Uncle Jerry? Who named him that? Why did no one go to HR and say, like, hey, so there's this guy running around saying, hi, I'm Uncle Jerry and I'm your new boss. Like, the audacity.
I just feel like it's because it's 1995 and white men are ruling the world even more than they are now, because at least now we're calling them out on their weird patriarchal bullshit. And so back then it was not going to happen. Like, no one's snitching out Uncle Jerry.
I hope that these women who had to call him Uncle Jerry got some sort of settlement. And then I said, oh, no, wait, they didn't, because this is a defunct marketing company. But one can hope, right? One could wish, one could fantasize.
So he got the promotion because he was doing the most as a security guard. And apparently his employers were impressed and made him the director. So like when I say the most, I mean that he basically like wants to pat down his employees before they leave, when they come in. It's all of this like weird shit that's like you're taking your job too seriously. But anyway, his job was to observe the technicians applying the instant winner stamp to high value game pieces, and he pioneered this idea to put random watermarks that deterred counterfeit.
Okay, so he like did something useful. I mean, I'm like, it's a little piece of paper, like, okay, so I get it, and we're like not automating the fancy, like, you want $1 million, like, okay, heard that, but like, you're not patting me down.
I don't want any uncle touching me.
Calling HR. Going to HR, even in 1995.
So going back to inspecting employees, he did this thing where like he would check their shoes to make sure that they weren't stealing any pieces, because they were tiny pieces, they can fit them in their shoes.
So I'm sorry. It's a piece of paper. People hide razor blades under their tongue, okay? People smuggled drugs into jails. You think checking my shoes is where I'm putting this little piece of paper? That's what you think is happening? Can't check my underwear, boss. Can't check my bra, boss.
Under my boobs.
Like, if I'm... it's covered in boob sweat. I'd like to redeem this sweaty McDonald's piece. Thank you so much. I just think it's crazy because it's like, if you don't trust me, why am I working here? And, like, why are any of us working here? And, like, this is insane.
All I can think about are the drug dealers in the movies that made their, like, employees bag drugs naked.
That feels real. That feels so normal because it's like these are high value. Sometimes we're like in the mix with people who are going to come run up on our spot. I'm like, okay, I get it. If everyone is consenting to like cook coke naked, like that's their business. I don't consent to being asked to take my shoes off because this is a workplace. At the height of Jerry's time at Simon, he actually decided to make a vest so that when traveling with the pieces, they were secured, like secret pockets, honey. He literally was like, here's a vest. I've engineered it. It's got secret pockets. These high value pieces are close to my body. Okay. And I just feel like in one like aspect of this idea, I'm like, smart, initiative, okay? This is how white men get ahead. They do little things and people think that they're big things and they're like very impressed. But I can't help but wonder if a black person showed up and was like, all right, so check it. I am head of security and I made this vest, okay? I have keys to secret pockets on this vest, okay? Biometrics on lock for me. How an employer would react to that? They'd be like, we don't know.
First of all, a black person having secret anything, they'd be like, sir, we're firing you for stealing.
Here's your secret unemployment.
I don't even know if a black person would have a director of security job, but let's just say...
Not in the 90s, right.
Let's just say Simon Marketing had a diversity initiative. You know, they're still not allowing no black Uncle Jerry to create anything. And if they do, they would literally be like, thanks so much, Jerry. So what we actually did was we stole your idea. We're calling it a Steve vest, and Steve is actually the creator of it, and you don't get to wear it. The auditor does, because the auditor is a white man.
Or what they would do is they'd say, okay, we're gonna let you wear the vest, but your auditor has the keys to the vest, so he's actually going to have to violate your person in order to get the pieces out. We don't really need you, but we just want you to think that we need you because we have a diversity initiative. Like, I just, when you listen to these stories, I don't know about you, but like, I'm constantly like, okay, so how far in this scam would I get? I wouldn't have gotten the promotion because I would have been like, let me check your shoes for pieces. And they'd be like, if you don't sit your black ass down, I'm not taking off my shoes for you. And then they would have walked over me as I'm like bent over trying to untie people's shoelaces. And then I'd been fired. So I just feel like this scam so far, he hasn't even started using these like materials for like good, but good meaning his good, like evil to everyone else. But it's just like, I wouldn't have even made it this far. In 1995.
No.
I'd have been the director of
the McDonald's location.
No, not even. This closet that is a supply closet that we put director on because we're sick of you sending emails asking for a promotion.
He's now flying these high-value pieces to different distribution centers to scatter the pieces across the U.S. So basically what he would do, right, he would go to the airport, he'd tell the female auditor that he had to use the bathroom, and then when he's in the bathroom, he uses that opportunity alone to steal the winning game pieces. He replaces them with common pieces, so like the non-winners, like your french fries and your nuggets and all the shit that you don't want, reseals that envelope, and then carries on his journey without the auditor being any of the wiser.
Basically, he had just gotten access to this new job and he was already like, how can I act up? He stole a piece, okay? And didn't just take it to see if he could get away with it, get it out of the building. He stole the piece and then he gave it to his brother-in-law at a barbecue. And this wasn't, again, the piece for the fries that like everyone's already winning. It was a piece for $25,000. I just truly, I'm like, okay, cool. You wanted to see if you could get away with it. And like, you totally did. However, you disrespected the entire nation the moment that you decided to do that. Because everybody was out here trying to get those pieces, hoping that they could like, you know, pay off some debt or like, you know, put money, you know, towards their mortgage. But instead, now that piece that everyone is hunting for is now in some random guy's pocket at a family function. Like, again, you just got this promotion.
and you already acting up.
Black Jerome would never.
Because Black Jerome would not feel comfortable enough being like, wow, they just gave me a promotion, so let me act a fool day one on my new job. I've got new benefits. Are they giving me 401k? Are they giving me health insurance? I'm not selling one of these little crusty pieces.
Absolutely not.
To see if I can do it.
Black Jerome has tried twice as hard his entire life. He cannot fuck up for McDonald's. You know, he's not doing that.
You're right. Because if Jerome was Black, he would be 95 years old, just now receiving this promotion. And he's like, I've worked my entire life for this. And I'm not about to lose that fight over a crusty piece because my kids got to go to college and I like to go to the doctor. So I just think that it's important that we note that, like, he really was trying it from day one. And it's kind of funny, too, because, like, when you take a step back from the, like, Simon marketing employer perspective, they're like, wow, we love that this guy is doing the most, okay? He's all up in his coworker's grill. So let's promote him. And meanwhile, the first chance he gets, acts up.
Taylor, if you had the opportunity to have all those pieces, would you take one?
No, because Black people go to jail for stuff like this, okay? Black people go to jail for doing the same thing with a justification where it could be like, you know, this is the plot of John Q. I acknowledge in my head. I was like, I have to steal this to pay for my son's emergency surgery or he'll die. Even if there was a justification of why I needed this piece, that doesn't end well when you're Black. There's no, like, let me call my homeboy. So I'm not taking anything.
I would try it, but just with, like, a chicken nugget. You know, like, I would be like, can I do it? Let me fuck around with these free chicken nuggets just in case I can.
If you're going to just steal a piece to see if you can steal a piece and it's going to be low risk, at least make it, like, a low risk piece that people want, aka I would steal a McFlurry piece, okay? Because let's be real, that ice cream, top shelf to not be gourmet or artisanal. However, those machines are never working.
So one of the things the computers did at Simon Marketing was randomly pick winners. According to Jerry in the Daily Beast article, he saw when a computer randomly selected a factory in Canada to receive the game piece and noticed the execs at Simon Marketing reran the program to pick another winner in the United States. Which, I mean, kind of scammy.
Wholeheartedly a scam. You don't want our brothers and sisters in the North with their universal health care to win Monopoly pieces either. Rude.
Like, what did Drake and Canada do? They just gave us Degrassi. You know, like, we should give them these winning pieces. But anyway, in response, Jerry decides to play the game his own way.
Which is kind of crazy because, like, imagine, like, I don't know, the entire country is playing one game of Monopoly and you singularly decide to play by your own rules. Again, white man shit. Everyone else is abiding by these rules in the United States and Canada. Canadians are following the rules, even though they're not even in the game, but they don't know it. Everyone's following the rules, but Jerry says, nope, I'm too good for that.
When you're guarding the pieces, you can take them. You can give them to your friends. You can give them to your family at a barbecue. And you can demand a cut of the earnings. And there's nothing that anyone, not even the lady auditor, can do to stop you.
One thing kind of stopped him. And when I say stop, I really should say, like, kind of like put like a pause, like a little like wave the flag, like pause on the play for 2.5 seconds. So after stealing a few pieces, he put on his fake, you know, Robin Hood hat and tights and decided to send one of the pieces for $1 million winning to a St. Jude Research Hospital in Tennessee. Yes, it's for kids with cancer. It's research. To me, that's peak. Like, I'm in my emotional, I feel guilty bag.
Okay, like, I like that he gave it to St. Jude's. Shout out to St. Jude's. Honestly, I don't think he did it to be a good guy. I think he did it as collateral. And I think it was more like the same reason why he took the documents that Simon had proving that they were reselecting Canadian winners. If he gets caught, he could just say, at least I stole for charity, right? Like, if he gets caught, he can be like, they stole from Canada and Canada's so nice. Why would you steal from Canada?
I just like to believe that, like you said, he was like, well, Simon was stealing from Canada, so I gave back to kids that were sick.
Well, I also don't think his guilt got the best of him, because shortly thereafter, he started to build out a scam team.
So you're definitely right about that. 95 was a big year for Jerry. This is also the same year that he meets this guy at an airport named Gennaro Colombo. So Colombo claimed to be a part of the Colombo crime family. And if we're keeping a buck, calling a spade, like, if that is his family, they should have roasted the fuck out of him at their next family reunion. Because after Colombo got a piece from Jerry that was a winning big prize item, Colombo decided to star in a McDonald's commercial.
I just feel like the first rule of being in the mob, gang, or any organization that's like illegal is to not make the block hot. He was America's favorite mobster at this point, because this fool starred in a national commercial featuring Monopoly winners, and all of America probably saw it. Like, he starred in a commercial with a stolen winning ticket for a Viper. Tony Soprano would completely hate to see it.
So I've never seen The Sopranos, so like I would assume, right, that Tony would hate to see it. The Sopranos was like a big time commitment, and I just like don't have that kind of time like in my TV watching schedule right now. But I'll get to it because I really want to understand more of the mobster mentality so I can better understand what the hell was going through Columbo's mind. The one thing that he did that was like kind of smart but like kind of not smart: when he got the ticket item for the car, like he got the piece to win this Viper, he actually didn't keep it. It was just for the sake of a commercial. Colombo chose the money, which is kind of like annoying because it's peak greedy. Because over the course of the next year, Jerry just starts regularly giving Colombo these big ticket winning pieces. So it's like you're already sitting on stacks, my guy.
I mean, well, Gennaro does share the wealth because he brings in his girlfriend, Robin, into this whole mix.
Robin helps her man out in a very particular way, which is she starts to plug in her family into Jerry's scheme, right? So every time that he decides, okay, it's time to cash in a new ticket, he'll give a ticket to Robin and Robin will give it to her dad or give it to like a cousin or like a friend. So that way it's sort of like a few degrees away from him as the like person that's orchestrating everything. But of course, he's getting a kickback.
Carmela would never. This is pretty much now a pyramid scheme, and Jerry is the Avon lady with the pink Escalade.
This is the start of the downfall of Robin's life. But all of this talk about food has me hungry. I think it's time for us to take a break. We have a message from our sponsors, and no, it's not McDonald's. We're getting there, though. We're working on it. We'll be right back after the break.
So one thing we have in common with scammers is the love for a good old black turtleneck, especially in the winter. But sometimes you need a little pop. You need like a little color going on. And that's why we're loving jewelry and accessories brand By Santos, designed by Camille Palustre. By Santos is inspired by her Filipino roots, and it fuses that island spirit with contemporary style and modern designs. Think pukas and pearls, Buddha charms with like that really cute tangerine beading. Yes, it is a look. And right now, Scam City listeners get 10% off with the code SCAMCITY. That's SCAMCITY to redeem 10% off at buy-santos.com. That's buy-santos.com. You can also give them a follow on Instagram at _buy_santos. That's _buy_santos. Now back to the scam. So it's 96, right? And we're literally a year into Colombo and Jerry pawning off these pieces. And Jerry has no intention on retiring this scam. Like, he's still in the illegal bag, still getting the kickbacks, living his best life. At this point, he's even getting land in exchange for these tickets. So Simon Marketing collaborates with Mars Candy at this time, and they put the director of security in charge of the Grey M&M contest. The Mars Candy game was essentially, if you found an imposter gray M&M in a regular bag of M&Ms in 1996, you were eligible for a cash prize. Guess who finds one single gray M&M in a Ziploc bag in her freezer when looking for a snack? Robin.
Do you know what I find in my freezer in the middle of the night when I want a midnight snack? Probably nothing more than like a slightly freezer-burned Trader Joe's ice cream, not a $20,000 M&M. Fast forward a few years post the great Eminem find of 1996, and Robin and her relatives are sort of like the main ones winning. And I think that the heads of the operation were like, this looks a little sus. We need other people to win these big pimping prizes. So they decide that they're going to start to try to find other people that they know they trust, that they can pass these pieces off to. And then these people can say, hey, I've won this $1 million, McDonald's. Give me my money, run me my check. And then they're turning around and sending that kickback back to the squad up at HQ.
So these people are just getting really reckless, and I don't mean just in their HR practices. Not only are they giving pieces to randoms, they're flushing pieces down the toilet.
How much money did my parents spend at McDonald's that they didn't need to spend? Because I was like, oh, let's go find Baltic Avenue because I have Atlantic.
And it's like, sweetie, a psychic has that, babe.
No, it's in the sewer. An alligator in Florida is eating the piece you need because these assholes are just flushing down these little pieces of paper that everyone is like getting like all like amped up trying to find. And like, this is like a little black childhood anecdote. I remember always being like a kid and being like, mom, like, can we go to McDonald's? Like, oh, can I just, I really want McDonald's. And then my mom would look at me with like, not even break, like just straight face and go, do you have McDonald's money? If I had to say what I think the source of that statement is, because every black person I know is like, and my mom has said that to me, do you have McDonald's money? Do you have McDonald's ice cream money? Do you have McDonald's chicken nuggets money? Like whatever kind of, whatever you wanted at McDonald's, a black mom is ready to be like, do you have that kind of money? I feel like it is because of McDonald's monopoly that was born, because black kids everywhere were probably like, I want to win these pieces. And black moms were like, I didn't work all day, okay, to take your ass to McDonald's when we have spaghetti at the house.
You probably had more of a chance to win $1 million eating your mom's food than you did McDonald's.
Because all these pieces were gone, flushed down the toilet. Meanwhile, these assholes are out here glowing up, okay, with their new cars and not those tacky McDonald's issue Vipers that Columbo was too good for. They've got new homes, they've got new clothes, and they're literally going on trips to places far away like Florida. Just kidding. They're literally in Italy on yachts.
Now Jerry wants more people in rotation to claim the winnings so that he could have more control over his kickback empire and make more money at a faster rate. This is a barely functioning business model, and things take a really left turn when, plot twist, Columbo dies.
Columbo dies because he actually gets into a car accident with Robin. So they're driving, right? Because by this point, they're married. They, like, have a kid. It's very, like, nuclear family shit. They're driving in a car that actually was purchased with the McDonald's scam money. So everything, again, full circle, okay? It's just, it all loops back. If y'all hadn't gotten caught in this mess, this wouldn't have happened. Robin is behind the wheel. They're driving and they get into an accident. And Columbo doesn't die like on the scene. He actually has to go to a hospital, and I think they end up taking him off life support, or he goes into cardiac arrest a few days after he's been there. But apparently behind the scenes in their marriage, things were real shaky, and his family was basically super suspicious of the fact that y'all got into this accident, but like, Robin, you're fine, you were driving, but like, our son, like our baby Columbo, is not. Were you on some shady shit?
Hey, you drove and you crashed in this technique where you only killed our son and you had your child in the backseat. I'm gonna ricochet my car. Like, that's not how car crashes work.
And what ends up happening is, when everything gets brought to light, you know, through the FBI, Robin actually becomes super suspicious because she thinks that his family tipped off the FBI about her and her family's role in this McScam as a means of getting back for her for the car accident that they blame her for orchestrating in such a way that doesn't exist.
Like, it's not like Columbo kept a low profile. Like, I'm sure the cops would have found out Robin's connection to Columbo because he was in commercials and all of her friends and family were also winning. So it's not that hard to untangle this whole entire web and find Robin in it. But I'm also not sure that the parents did not say anything. Like, I'm pretty sure his parents did call the cops.
Oh, I am 1,000%. Yeah. People who think that you orchestrate a car accident so that someone else is fatally injured and you get a scratch, if they think that you're doing that, these are the same. Like, these people are calling the FBI on speed dial. They're like, actually, because we are a crime family, we actually have a direct connect at the FBI because they're always tailing us. So we're going to call John, who's normally tailing us, and we're actually going to give him a tip to come looking for you. Like, in my head, that's how I think that, like, his family went about getting back at Robin.
And unfortunately for Jerry, at this point, he has no choice but to get more people involved. With his squad gone, he's got to tack on heftier fees to anyone he brings on so he doesn't mess the profit margins, because this is a full business now. And this is kind of like the downfall of our friend Uncle Jerry.
This is basically like the part of The Wolf of Wall Street where, like, Leonardo DiCaprio as Jordan Belfort is like taking quaaludes that he has no business taking and crashes his car, but he's still okay because he's still got the hot wife and he's still got the millions and he's not in jail. But you know it's coming. You know that. You know that this good luck ain't lasting forever.
I also think of it like Titanic, when the ship has hit the iceberg, but Jack and Rose are having freak nasty sex in the back car, like below the deck. They're unaware that in like 15 minutes, one of them will be hogging a floating door in the ocean while the other one freezes to death. It's not a pyramid scheme if you're scheming by yourself. And after Columbo's death, Jerry needs a new way to find kickback connects. So looking for a new middleman, Jerry gets sloppy and recruits the first person he meets off the street. And of course, this is not a great idea because he doesn't vet any of these new people. And then he hires the Bakers. The Bakers are this Mormon family who he meets when he purchases two pieces of property from the Bakers in South Carolina. The Bakers actually are in a lot of debt, and they've been playing the McDonald's monopoly this entire time with the hopes of winning money to get them out of debt.
These people have like 5 kids, right? And they're just like trying to like make an honest living, and they decide like, let's get in on this get rich quick scheme. And again, like, who do those ever work out for? Like, I just want to meet one person who's like, hi, I'm wealthy, and it's because of my get rich quick scheme.
And then you have Andrew Glom. He is fresh out of jail. He was a coke dealer, and he has a lot of friends from his coke dealing jail days. So a plug within a plug. Because the Bakers and Glom at this point are pretty much like Avon ladies. They have to bring in other people that they know to claim the prizes.
Jerry does this thing where he really says, I'm over it. I don't want to do any work. I just want to get the checks. I'm a CEO of a criminal enterprise organization. So here you go, Glom. I'm going to give you all of the high prize $1 million instant winner pieces that I have left. Because remember, McDonald's Monopoly was like an annual thing. And so they're printing billions of pieces, but it's the game's only played for like a few months at a time, like twice a year. So he says, here are the rest of the tickets for Year of Our Lord 1999. All 8 of them. I'm going to give them to you. Do what you will. Give them whoever you give them to. I don't really care. I just want you to make sure that I get my money on time and that these kickbacks clear in my bank account.
But I will say, in Glom's defense, he tried his best. Like, he tried to be the HBIC, because what he did was he implemented his own little mini checks and balances. He made sure that anyone who was claiming to have found a winning ticket, they had this separate paper trail to throw the feds off. And so even though most people lived in the same town as Jerry and Glom, because LOL, like, this is before Twitter and Facebook where we could like randomly attract scammers. There's no DMs. There's no sliding in and asking, hey, would you like to make some quick money? They would rent burner apartments in states that they claimed to have bought the winning French fry from, and even opened up new electricity accounts. So they really tried. That's a lot of social security numbers.
I mean, so like, it was a good idea in theory. I mean, considering this all was happening in the late 90s and no one had to worry about like VPNs or like triangulating like cell service towers, but it didn't matter that they were doing the most and trying to cover their tracks, because the FBI found all of these people and they eventually got caught. And the FBI was using this really advanced technology, maybe you've heard of it, called pen and paper. Literally, it only took one agent to notice that the fake addresses that people were saying, oh, I got this in like North Carolina, right? And I live at like 123 Main Street. The FBI agent's like, okay, cool. That's what you said in that McDonald's commercial. That's what like your paperwork said. However, like you are having the checks for $1 million sent to you in Florida. Going back to our analogy of like what part of the movie we're at, this is the part of the movie where like there's a quick montage of everyone getting their phone taps and the FBI like zooming in and they're like bored with all the pictures and the red string is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and the pieces of the web are just being more intricately woven.
Well, this is definitely when Rose has to take the axe and she has to like set Jack free, but the water is rising and they don't get that it's an iceberg, but it's totally an iceberg. So like it's about to go down at this point any minute now. Dent notifies McDonald's. Simon Marketing still has no clue at this point because they're like foolish, but Dent and McDonald's collaborate in order to take down the person who's at the center of this scam, who's literally sitting in Simon Marketing offices as this whole entire thing happens, which is just hilarious.
Jerry should have known that the water was rising and that the feds were closing in, but of course the criminals never know and they think that their luck lasts forever. Meanwhile, Dent actually was pretty close to just like shutting this whole shit down. He went to McDonald's and was like, hey, so you know that McDonald's Monopoly thing you're doing? And they're like, yeah, with our buddies at Simon Marketing. And he's like, yeah, sure. Those aren't your buddies because their head of security actually has been robbing y'all blind to the tune of, oh, I don't know, maybe $24-ish million. And McDonald's was like, McWhat? And he was like, McYeah. So he goes to McDonald's, he tells them what's tea, and McDonald's is like, we have to end this immediately. We can't keep playing this game. Like, we have failed America. And it's like, no, you probably have failed America when y'all decided to start adding so much salt to everything. This is just a cherry on top. What McDonald's wants to do is immediately like call it quits, never do this again. The FBI is like, not an option, sis. You gotta run this promotion one more time because we need to catch these people in the act. We need to catch them ketchup-handed. I was gonna say red-handed, but then I was like, what's red ketchup? I don't know. I don't have a joke. But anyway, so McDonald's has no choice but to run the ill-fated competition.
During this game cycle in 2000, the Bakers involved their foster son in the scheme. And I'm just like, what kind of parents? Like, okay, what I'm doing is wrong. And I know that I'm scamming and doing something against the Mormon belief. I'm going to now rope in my son because, like, if I'm doing something wrong, you should be doing something wrong. If you're going to be a scamming stage mom, be a Kris Jenner. Don't be like scamming your son for some french fries and a commercial.
So their foster son claims the prize, and of course, because everyone has already lost their damn minds, he appears on another McDonald's commercial. I don't know what is up with these people trying to be on TV and have this weird, like, flex but okay moment. Like, I get it, there was no IGTV for everyone to, like, create their own 15 minutes of fame, but, like, if Ronald McDonald shows up to your house with confetti to like basically make it rain because you've just won $1 million, you probably should not agree to do that. You should probably be like, Ronald, get out my face, you know, if you obtained that ticket illegally. But of course, everyone in this whole situation is so greedy, and he ends up not only in the commercial, but that commercial ends up on Agent Dent's office at the FBI in Jacksonville.
Which brings us to 2001. Bush Jr. is president, and I just want everyone to note that Jerry has been scamming for Father Bush and now Son Bush. Agent Dent wants Monopoly to do yet another, even bigger, pick your prize Monopoly because one is just not enough. Like, they need all of the tangible evidence, and that tangible evidence, Dent is going to get it.
So what you're telling me is everyone is being greedy. On the McDonald's side, they're being greedy for more money. Dent is over here. You have the tape on your desk of the last boy who fake won the money, but that's not enough. So now more greed, and it's all at the expense of us regular degulars out here trying to get a 20-piece chicken nugget because it comes with twice as many McDonald's pieces. A shame.
So Jerry, he steals two winning game pieces, which just, this is the part that boggles my mind. Like, Jerry, you, at this point, you're swapping plots of land. You're in a whole new decade, fam. Just leave that in the 90s. So just as Glom was picking his final winner, the FBI was picking their final piece of evidence to shut this whole entire operation down. They found out that Glom was going to award the final ticket to this man named Michael Hoover. So when Hoover announces that he's won the latest McDonald's competition, the game is over for Jerry.
Honestly, Jerry should just be thanking his lucky stars that he had the run that he did. This scam ran through three presidencies, okay? I think that might be our longest running scam to date on Scam City. He gave it his best, or as they say, the good old college try. But like anything else, all good things must come to an end. And come to an end they did. In August 2001, the FBI made 8 arrests, which included both of the Bakers. Their foster son, his name was John Davis, of no relation to Taylor Davis of this podcast, Andrew Glom, and Michael Hoover. The man who searched the shoes of Simon marketing employees back in 1989, in 2001, well, he's charged with conspiracy to commit mail fraud. Could you imagine like what the group text would be like if group text existed, but they didn't because you had to pay per text in 2001? But imagine if there was a group text of Simon marketing employees being like, yo, remember that boss that we had like 2 seconds ago who used to check our shoes way back in the day when we left? Yeah, well, guess what? He's gotten locked up by the feds for conspiracy to commit mail fraud. Like, I would imagine that like the water cooler, that was hot goss.
Remember Jerry's plan to use evidence that McDonald's rigged the contest by excluding Canadians?
Of course I do. How could one forget?
Well, of course he tried it. And I think that that's the epitome of a white man to literally like be sitting in front of the FBI and they're like telling you like, hey, dude, like here's your entire web of lies that you've created for a billion years. And he's like, also Canada. But one of the tackiest like white Christmas tree type of tacky shit that Jerry does is he uses the St. Jude's $1 million donation to try and score a reduced sentence.
He's like, so what can you do for me? And they're like, literally get you some water and read your Miranda rights. I love to say to people like, yeah, well, you know, we all played this game and basically overnight it just went away. And everyone was like, yeah. And I'm like, well, actually, it didn't go away overnight. So it actually all went down over the course of a day. It was just an ordinary day. But the next day was a shift in human history, which is why no one has heard of this. The McScam trial happened on September 10th, 2001. Any news outlet that would have covered this story, like immediately, like it was a no-go. So Jacobson super recruiters think pretty much everyone that second tier underneath him of his pyramid scheme, like Glom and the Bakers, were all sentenced to 1 year and 1 day in prison and had to pay hefty fines. I'm like, what is a hefty fine? It actually makes me think about the college admission scandal episode we did and how Felicity Huffman went to jail for 14 days. And everyone was like, okay, but if she had been black, like, sis would have been sentenced for definitely more than 14 days. And she definitely would have served more than 11 of the 14 days?
I'm not mad that Jerry didn't really do that much time for this McDonald's scam because I think it's a scam within a scam anyway. And like, McDonald's monopoly a joke. But I just think it's like the court and the system, they are so not proportionate. And it's just every scam I think of, I'm just like a black or brown person would have done so much more time. They would have created sentences just to put on him. They would have been like, you know what, sir, we're actually going to put you for racketeering. And also you committed murder because Gennaro Colombo died and like you did it. Also, I'm going to plant this cocaine in your pocket and it's yours now.
And I'm going to claim that the war on drugs was started because of your actions. Like it would have tacked on, it would have piled on, it never would have stopped. They also would have been like, oh, okay, so we're going to drag out your case, okay? We're gonna make sure it lasts a nice 2 years. And while this case is going on, we're gonna make new laws just to tack them onto your sentence and convict you of them.
So I know I gave you a hint and I said that Jerry did a short amount of time, but I want everyone to just take some time out and just say or think of a number. And these are like the years that you think Jerry did. 3. He did 3 years in jail.
for a crime that spanned 2 Bushes, 3 presidents, and $24 million. And he did 3 years in jail. Like, that's not even high school.
I could get a degree in that time.
The government does take everything he owns, but again, I want to just say that he only spent 3 years in jail.
Our ideal portrait of the modern Mormon household, they fell in some rough times. They were excommunicated from their church, and to this day, they're still having to pay back their prize money. But fear not, because they're on a payment plan of $50 a month. I have student loan payments that are bigger. And me trying to pursue an education so that I can get a well-paying job, I actually make bigger monthly payments due to interest than what these people are paying back for being thieves.
And Glom and Jerry, they're kind of living this Golden Girl spinoff fantasy. They're both in their 70s, poor health, living quietly, and they talk almost every day.
You should not be allowed to fraternize with other co-conspirators, okay, while you're still paying back the government, regardless of how old you are, for stealing millions of dollars. I'm sorry, but no.
So kind of like Hustlers, this scam is also going to get the Hollywood treatment. After 72 hours of the story's publication, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck went halfsies, and they bid an insane $1 million to create this movie, making it the highest price ever paid for an option article. HBO is producing one with Mark Wahlberg, and that's going to be called McMillions, and it's currently in production.
My calendar is clear for all of 2020 and 2021 for any McMillions content that, like, anyone is trying to give.
I feel like this is going to be the Fyre Fest treatment where we get 2 in 1, and I cannot wait. I'm devouring all of it.
So we're going to take one more quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, Cass, you know what time it is. It's time to rate that scam.
Boop, 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 boop. You know what? Can someone create sirens for us?
Yeah, because that siren sound was not it. You sounded like a siren that, like, needs a battery change. You were like, boop, 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 boop. All right, let's get straight into it. First question. On a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being straight trash, 5 being pure excellence, how would you rate the idea of the scam?
I am bringing in the vest into this idea. I love this fucking vest. She loves an item for you to steal things in. I'm going to go ahead and rate the idea of the scam, including the vest, a 5. I think that it was a good idea. I think Jerry was kind of just like, I'm going to use the trust that this company has for me, because fuck corporations anyway, and I'm going to make money off of this. And I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at you for scamming a corporation.
The fact that he swapped out the pieces with regular pieces, chef's kiss, because I feel like a true idiot would have been like, I'm just going to take these. And then it's like, okay, but now when you're in Idaho and they're like, where are the pieces for the containers? What are you going to say? I really want to be a hater always. I'm always like, it could have been, but this one, you know, feels pretty perfect in the idea. I think that there was a shortcoming, which is that, like, it all could have been traced back to him. But then I'm like, if you had done this correctly, it really wouldn't have. And also, you got away with it for so long that, like, for a while, you weren't doing too bad. So I'm going to say that I'm going to give it a 5 as well. Our second Old Faithful question. On a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being straight trash, 5 being pure excellence, how would you rate the execution of the scam?
The execution, I'm going to rate it a 3. And I feel like the execution was fine. I just wish that Jerry created some sort of document, contract, a little PowerPoint presentation of what not to do. And it would have been like, please, like, when the camera crew suggests to come to your house, say no, do less, you know, don't appear on TV. I feel like he was just kind of like, here are the tickets, do what you want to do, and not, like, he didn't give them any type of, like, checks and balances or rules. And I think that every scam needs tight rules.
I'm going to give it a 1. I think that you're right. Like, you need systems in place. And Jerry just said, like, I don't know what systems are. I don't care. And it's like, you can't be that greedy, have no systems, and then expect it, like, to continue to, you know, like, be a functioning thing that's ongoing. And so I just sort of am like, dog, no. If Hugh had just done a little more work on the front end, then the execution would have gone easily from a 1 to a 5. But you just got lazy with it. And that laziness led you to get caught, which is my last question, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the worst and 5 being perfection. How would you rate the takedown?
I appreciate that Jerry did not try to make himself the victim. I think that he's trash for even bringing up the St. Jude situation and the Canada conspiracy. I'm gonna rate the response to the takedown a 1.
All right, so I think I'm gonna give this one a 2. I agree, like, it was super like, oh, I did this thing and I only was wreaking emotional havoc and cholesterol havoc on Americans all over the country. But I give him an extra point because he said what he said, which was, if anything pops off, I'm using this Canada bit and I'm using this St. Jude's bit as an insurance policy. And he actually did it. And I really would love to award a point to anyone who's like, I said what I said, you know, and he said what he said. He was like, y'all tried it, so I tried it too. So that gives Cass an average of a 3 out of 5 for the McScam, while I am not far behind, rating it with a 2.6.
And that's a McScam.
It's a McScam. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at @ScamCityPod and comment. Tell us how you would rate the scam. So I'm Taylor.
And I'm Cass.
And this has been another episode of Scam City. Boop, 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 boop. We need buttons because we're not good at this. This is bad.